Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is Tuesday, January 9th, 2024. And our call-in number is 347-857-3293. And this program is dedicated to Ralph Pointer, What's Happening. And if you are tuned into this program tonight, then you know what the topic might be. Ralph Pointer's charge to the rest of us. I'll repeat, Ralph Pointer's charge to the rest of us. What must we do? Pick up the work. And what work are we talking about? A news analysis, an anatomy of oppression that requires an anatomy of colonialism and imperialism. An anatomy of the American capitalist system. And tonight we have many guest speakers, and every single guest speaker on this program is a soldier in one field of struggle against oppression or another. And so in respect of our dear fallen comrade who transitioned on Christmas morning, I have some of his thoughts for you this evening. I apologize for the technical difficulties.
Separate organization. Everybody's doing their own thing when it's really, in the final analysis, not about one thing. It's about everything. But now we have the perfect storm. If there was a solid organization, the government could be changed. But there is no solid organization because everybody's busy doing their own thing, and they think their thing is the only thing. And if you don't understand that it's not one thing, it's everything, and we all have sayings for that. Touch one, touch all. You know, yeah, that's a nice saying. Nobody believes that for a moment. The unions in America never had a general strike. And so it's always been they bought into the individualistic thing. And as long as it's the individualistic thing, those guys up at the top are a unit. Rich people, people with privilege have been a unit. And if you look, one of the things that amazed me most was when I looked, you know, as a young person at the history of World War I. Kings and queens and cousins and uncles and aunts, and I'm saying, what? And what was everybody killing themselves for to maintain their opulent lifestyle, to maintain their status as better than everyone else? And I'm saying, and that's when I first said, well, these people are crazy as hell. You know, then I began thinking when people would do things, you know, let me think about that. Because most of the time, people are stupid. They do the wrong thing for the wrong reasons. And when you start analyzing, you know, as a kid, hey, that's pretty stupid. And the unions, you know, when you get into the, you get of age and you go to work, and the most oppressed people, the goddamn coal miners, and, you know, like you go underground, and at any minute you could be dead. You come out, and the white guys want to have their tower, you know, to wash that grit and grime. I said, go to hell, you know. But everybody was ashamed. The white guys didn't want to say anything, and the black guys were ashamed. So I walked into the tower wherever the hell I wanted. But it was, the whites were ashamed. And the blacks were ashamed. Don't raise that issue. But hell, I'm raising it. This tower is available. And what a tower, you know, the tower is. It's just, a tower is like a big bowl. And in the middle, it has a tower. And water is coming out in about 10 of different little things of water. Right? And so you walk up to the water, and you're washing yourself, and it gets caught in the bowl. And so they have a dozen towers. You know, a dozen bowls you walk up to, and they were cement, and, you know, you'd scrub up and get enough dirt off of you to go home without showers and everything. And it's segregated towers. And I say, look at these idiots. And like I said, you walk up to a tower, and, you know, you start cleaning yourself, and you embarrassed everybody. They knew that there was a rule. But nobody wanted to say, hadn't you better go to the other? Because, of course, they knew the answer. You know, like I'm watching, trying to figure how much money I made and what I'm going to do with it. And I don't want to hear anything. I'm happy that I lasted that day. The ceiling didn't come down. Didn't die of gas. Didn't fall in a shaft. Hey, you feel pretty good. I'm going home, and I'm 2 days away from payday. But that didn't say, that didn't make me stop thinking that, look at this stupidity. We're all in the same boat, but they want to be different. And when the thing really got, when my brother got a job as a draftsman.
And I'm going to stop it there. Yes, from a young man, he was in the coal mines. He was in the steel mines. He was working underground with all that heat. He was, of course, going to end up being a union organizer and a worker for the people. He understood what capitalism meant from the first moment he started working. And that is why he became someone who fights for oppression. And he continued that fight with his last breath. So it's up to us to pick up the work tonight. And we always start off by dedicating our poetry to Sister Lynn, and tonight we're going to say, Comrade Brother Ralph, presente, and we're dedicating our poetry to him as well. And boy, do we have some poets in the house for you. And I thank everybody who's online to make this a special broadcast. All right, Professor Louis, help us out. Your mic is open, and thank you.
This is for Ralph. What does it mean to be working class? Is that something from out of the past? Do we always got to come in last? That's the question I'm going to ask. What does it mean to be working class? Because today they say you're middle class. You can't pay the doctor. Your car needs gas. You're still paying off your college class. What you owe your credit card is never passed. Still, you're middle class this and middle class that. Upper lower middle class till you eat your hat, got the gap on your back, you got a little fat, you're still paying for the chair where you just sat. Is it all over just like that? Who stole the good life? Where's it at? Or was middle class just a little dream made up for you on your TV screen where everybody's comfy, or so it seems, and no one ever eats rice and beans? Because there was, in the beginning, there was just two classes. There was the big money, and there was the masses. We did the work. They kicked our asses. Most everything passes. There are still two classes, those who got it and those who don't. We think we're going to get it, but really we won't. Those who own the companies and make the big deals, every deal could cost you a meal. And for real, not too many people hold the power. They make $1 million while they take a shower. There's the owning class and the working class. Where are you at? Are you slow or fast? All you got to do is do the math. If you got a job, you're working class. If you're out of a job, you're really working class. We build the houses, work the fields. We run the hospitals and fix the meals. We make the family and work at home. Sometimes that's the hardest work of all. We clean the office. We teach the kids. Everything around us is something we did. No matter what your color or your name, no matter the country from where you came, the name of the game is still the same. And if the owner works, is he working class? Got his laptop and smartphone. He's moving fast. It all depends. First and last, if he owns a bodega or a little machine shop, he works for his money, and he works a lot. He might be working for everything he got, but the guy who owns the corporation, he could work all day. It won't change him. He might be a nice guy. He might be a jerk. He makes his big money off of other people's work. You can't make millions going to work and getting paid. You need other people's work to really have it made. When we punch the clock, he owns the stock. We do the labor, but he gets the flavor. We make the honey, but he takes the money, because working people make everything. We're the ones make the cash register ring. And when our work goes to someone else's profit, now you got it, and you don't got to ask. That's what makes us working class. And if I talk about class just a little more, your TV says we're starting class war. But the real news has come and gone. The class war is always on. It has been here since the day you were born. We just need to know whose side we're on. If we don't know our own class, take it from the poet. We will always take a beating, and we won't even know it, because your TV is programmed by the owning class. Your newspaper programmed by the owning class. Your search engine programmed by the owning class. When we don't know we're working class, the owning class will kick our ass. They get a real free pass, because you get no health care. You get lousy schools. The TV brings your kids up to act like fools. You get no union. You lose your job. You vote for politicians who think you're a slob, because we sometimes forget there's a bottom and a top, those who got it and those who do not. Better to remember, make no mistakes. If you're not an owner, you're a worker, and that's the breaks. And I bet there's nobody listening here who made $10 million just this year. So before I waste any more breath, before I talk myself to death, let me ask you to act on a fact that has come to pass. Your ass is in the working class. And before we get to another day when we open our mouths with something to say, before you speak and the words are gone, it's good to know whose side you're on and what it means to be working class. Is that something from out of the past? Do we always got to come in last? That's the question we got to ask. What does it mean to be working class? And one last little question before I'm gone. Tell me, whose side are you on?
Sorry, Lisa, your mic is open. Your mic is open, Lisa.
Oh. Hello there,
sorry,
dear Sister Betty. Hello there, dear Sister Betty. And first of all, let me just again send my love to you and definitely to our warrior brother, Ralph Poynter. I just wanted to let people just know real quickly, I know you have a very busy show tonight, but in keeping up with the work and doing what Ralph Poynter would do, I wanted to make people aware of a very important petition that is going around. This is something that they're asking organizations to sign on to, and this is something that the Black Alliance for Peace worked on, and I got it from their website, but they're calling for a petition for organizations to sign on to supporting South Africa's call to bring Israel up on genocide. And this would be going to the International Criminal Court or Criminal Justice System, so that they're going to be the ones that are going to be reviewing the case that South Africa is bringing, you know, before them. And so if people go to www.blackallianceforpeace.com, that's www.blackallianceforpeace.com. They're going to see what the Black Alliance for Peace is working on and what they're asking people to sign. But it is an organizational sign-on letter calling on states to support South Africa's Genocide Convention case against Israel at the ICJ. And they would really need to do this by the 10th, as on the 11th, January 11th, is when the ICJ will be prepared to hear the case, as far as I understand.
Well, I thank you, Sister Lisa. I hope that if anyone is on the line that's also aware of this, if Sister Lisa can't return, to make the announcement again, that one of our comrades make the announcement. I apologize for the gap. My microphone was off. I didn't want to create unnecessary background noise while the poet was reciting. I was just saying that was Ralph Poynter. For those of you who don't know, he went into the minds in Pennsylvania when he was 14 years old. He was a union organizer, however, when he was 12. He helped his dad stop the scabs from breaking up a fight in the mine, breaking up the mine by throwing rocks through the windows of the trucks that the bosses sent to collect workers for scabs and bring them to work while the union was on strike. When we talk about capitalism and anatomy of oppression, oppression is just what Professor Lewis said to you. When you don't know whose side you're on, when you don't understand the role of the elites and the bosses in the country. So I thank Professor Louis, and we always thank Brother Ralph for sharing his experiences. Without further ado, we've got another comrade in the house who's very politically active and may need to give us an update. And then we're going to go to Sister Julia. I hope she can hang in there with her, with us, and I apologize. But I believe Brother Tag is in the house, and he usually has an important announcement in terms of the People's Senate. And the People's Senate is one of our ways of trying to bring awareness and political education to our communities. Brother Tag, your mic is open. Thank you for joining us this evening. And Sister Lisa, please hang, Sister Julia, please hang in there. And thank you, Sister Lisa, for that update. Brother Tag, your mic is open.
Much appreciation and continued gratitude to you and to Brother Ralph for bringing this program out that is so essential. Shouts to everyone who has spoken thus far. Was really feeling that update as well as the poetry, as always, from Professor Louis. As far as the People's Senate is concerned, right now in the Northeast region, People's Senate Northeast, the Northeast region at present for the People's Senate is constituted by New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, Pennsylvania. And we are just coming off of last month's welcome home celebration and screening of the special feature that we put together for Mumia Abu-Jamal called Who is Mumia? And we're continuing to build off of that momentum. We were very encouraged by the turnout, and we were able to continue to raise awareness, funds, and just uplift the names and the struggles and the lives of our political prisoners on the front lines in this struggle out here. And so our next set of activities on the ground, we're gearing up for a toy and other resources, clothing, et cetera, drive. That will be at some point next month. And so we're working through the logistics of that right now. We will certainly continue to update y'all, and you'll be the first to know as far as the location and the date once we have that together. So we'll be bringing resources through, including toys, clothing. We're asking our comrades and the community to come through as well. If you have resources, material, clothing that you can offer up for the community, please do bring that through. We're working with some of our comrades in the Bronx to put that together. So more soon on that, and more broadly with the People's Senate, we're really looking to continue to hit the ground running in terms of building the People's Senate out here throughout the domestic and external colonies, especially given this mad auspicious year that we find ourselves in, all of these different elections, not only here in the U.S., but across the globe, dealing with all manner of electoral politics, which we know we need to be very mindful and strategic and wary of out here in imperialist United Snakes. So that's just a quick update as far as where we're at. Please do find us on spiritofmandela.org. We're really appreciating the steady build that we are doing here in the Northeast region and across these zones of genocide, ongoing and continuous genocide for profit. So we're very encouraged by the response that we're getting from our comrades in the community. But we need to hear from y'all. So if you've been interested in the People's Senate, you've heard about us, but maybe you've yet to come through to a meeting, you haven't stopped through to one of our house parties or activities, please do hit us up and find a place where you can get involved, because there's so much work to do, and we're honoring Brother Ralph today and throughout, and this message of picking up the work. Among other things, I loved hearing so much about Brother Ralph and his legacy and just, you know, just the energy that he brings. He's always brought to all spaces, and you know, hearing people's testimony about that energy and the love for the people that he just exuded, so inspiring, and we need to take that inspiration and turn it into concrete action, you know, as he always did. And so I'm reminded of one quote of many from words reflecting on Brother Ralph just this past weekend, where the one brother said, you know, he had so much on his plate at the time, to which Brother Ralph said, well, get a bigger plate. And that's just quintessential Brother Ralph right there. And so People's Senate just encouraging all of us to, as Brother Ralph did, you know, seek out that bigger plate here in 2024, because we need all of us.
Thank you. I'm going to move right along because we've got a lot of people. I don't know if they're just listening or they want to speak, but we're going to get to everyone and to find out. Comrade Juliet, first of all, on behalf of myself and the extended family and the biological family and the community family, I want to thank you for the poems that you wrote for my mate and my political partner. Thank you.
Oh, okay.
Ralph wrote down, I was going through some of his notes. If you know Ralphie, he had his notes on 50,000 different pieces of paper. And so I'm trying to pull all those little pieces of paper together, and I came across something that he had written down, or I don't know if he copied it or was thinking about it. And it was just three questions for how we should govern our lives. Number one, is it true? Number two, is it kind? Number three, will it do any good? Sister Comrade Julia, your mic is open.
Thank you, Betty. Well, Brother Ralph's coal mine, if the struggle is the coal mine, then the canaries of the coal mine are the children. Because I wanted to speak, there are two ways of talking about what's happening to the children in Gaza. There's a poetic way, and I'll leave that aside tonight, and I'll speak about it in a political way. The Israeli Foreign Ministry just sent an urgent cable to all its embassies instructing them to press diplomats and politicians in the host countries to issue statements against South Africa's case against Israeli genocide. The diplomats are given a script of arguments to follow, including the sort of language to use to reject what is termed as, quote, outrageous, absurd, and baseless allegations made against Israel. The cable can be obtained from Axios agency. Now, what about the children, you'll ask? We need to connect the dots here between the pressure placed on the world's highest placed statesmen and the political blackmail placed by Jeffrey Epstein's network on the same VIPs through sexual leverage using underage girls. In other words, children with youthful marketability. And I'll give you one example that is so shocking. One, Barack, former Prime Minister of Israel, is connected to the name drop. His name is Ehud Barak. Number two, Marvin Minsky was on the drop list. He's from MIT, and that is Netanyahu's alma mater. But three and four are the most shocking. The late disabled physicist and Nobel Prize winner Stephen Hawking was invited to Little St. James. Why? Because Epstein was interested in artificial intelligence. And four, Noam Chomsky was invited to lunch with Epstein. Why? Because Epstein was interested in artificial intelligence. So if we connect that dot to the fact that children in Gaza are being bombed, target bombed, by artificial intelligence, we get the fact that children in the belly of the beast are sexually used to be weaponized against children in Gaza via artificial intelligent bombing. I don't know if I found the words to tell you how unspeakably... Did it get through? Betty, did it get through?
I think you're going to have to repeat the message, and that is one of the things. I think it was Himmler who said, you know, you got to tell it over and over and over again, and then you can make them believe anything. But I also think that applies to the truth. You have to keep saying it in a lot of different ways so that people can understand and connect the dots. And unless you have something else to say, I'm going to give some of our comrades an opportunity to respond to you. But I thank you for this report. And I don't think anyone here is shocked. They may be upset, but I don't think they're shocked. Did you have more that you wanted to add, Comrade Julia?
If we connect this interest of Epstein's in artificial intelligence with the bombing in Gaza, we understand. We understand how connected and interconnected we all are with what's happening so many thousands of miles away. And we can quote Mumia when he says, there are no borders in consciousness.
Thank you. I'm going to move on, but if you're around, as people comment on what you've said, I will be glad to open up your mic and let you respond to them. One of the things I want to make clear to people is that at the top of the show, we had Ralph from an audio recording done 2 years ago that was made. And what he's saying is, if we're all thinking we're individuals, but the ruling class is one. And so the names that Sister Julia is giving us are names from the ruling class. And I hope you're connecting the dots and understanding what we're saying. I want to move on, and we're extending the time because there's a lot to report and there are a lot of people on the call. And we've got someone from our Commander Potts on. We have not heard from her for a while. And whenever we see her on our screen, we try to open up her mic. But we want to go back to our political prisoner announcement. Sister Anne of New York City, Jericho, your mic is open. And thank you for returning. Once again, this is Ralph Pointer, What's Happening, and I'm Betty Davis.
Thank you, Sister Betty. I'm still reeling from getting used to the fact that Ralph is no longer physically with us, although he will always be with us in our hearts and in our minds. I have some good news about one of our political prisoners. Dr. Tarek Mehana is now finally out of the ADX and is on his way back home. He's currently in a halfway house. So that's some good news. Of course, we have horrible news coming out of Palestine about systemic torture meted out to Palestinian detainees in Israeli army camps, which has been very well reported and documented by this Euromed Human Rights Monitor, because they have been treating Palestinian detainees like, quote-unquote, non-human animals, like they like to say. So the majority of these horrific torture operations start as soon as people are captured. Soldiers beat the detained people and strip them naked except for their underwear, forcing them to sit on their knees in the street for hours while being harassed and treated with contempt. Multiple freed prisoners said they were violently transferred in trucks to open-air detention facilities where they endured brutal beatings and other forms of mistreatment. According to a released prisoner who insisted on anonymity, the majority of inmates are held in Israeli army camps rather than by the Israeli Prison Administration. As a result, they are not held under legal detention circumstances. Once they are transferred, detainees are forced to remain inside iron cages despite the very cold weather. Detainees frequently endured severe beatings all over their bodies, electric shock torture, purposeful burning with cigarette butts, being tied up by hands and feet in different positions, and ghost operations. And the ghost operations refer to the suspension of inmates by their hands and feet. The Sde Teman army camp has been turned into a Guantanamo-like prison. Detainees are held in very harsh conditions akin to open-air chicken cages without access to food or drink for long periods of time while being prevented, as we know, from meeting with lawyers or receiving visits from the Red Cross. 75-year-old Jihad Zakut told Euromed Monitor's team that Israeli forces took him into custody from his Gaza City home. After beating, kicking, and tying him with iron baskets, the soldiers used him as a human shield by putting him in a home in a neighborhood where military activity was taking place. He reported that while being transported in a truck along with other Palestinian prisoners, Israeli soldiers continually beat them on their heads with rifle butts. Upon reaching an army camp housing hundreds of prisoners, Zakut and his fellow detainees were forced to sleep on the ground and were only permitted to use the restroom once every 2 or 3 days. And they were also constantly beaten and denied access to medical treatment. So this is what has been happening, you know, in the middle of this horrible genocide. They're also doing very specific torture against people, and they're also disappearing people. And they're also taking organs out of dead bodies so that they can use them for organ transplants. So that is my short report for the day.
Thank you, Anne. Thank you. Do you want to quote the source again, please?
Oh, that is the Euromed Human Rights Monitor.
Thank you.
They have a website, and you can find them by just putting in that name in Google, Euro-Med Human Rights Monitor. And they've been reporting very, very consistently almost every day, as a matter of fact, on what is happening with people who have been, you know, just arbitrarily grabbed and detained in Gaza and also in the West Bank.
Thank you. We want to move right along. We're going to go to Brother Sayeto. We want to remind you we have extended the program for a half an hour, but please try to make your presentations concise and clear and to the point. Brother Sayeto, thank you for this evening.
Hello, everyone. I want to give honor to everyone on the broadcast tonight because you all have shown your work and you've shown your thrust. You did everything and are doing everything that Ralph would have us do. Charge to the rest of us. What must we do? Pick up the work. That's. I would like to, first of all, say Well, this segues right into what I was going to talk about. From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. What two-state solution? Blinken talks with Qatar and Egypt. There will be no two-state solution. There's never been any intent for a two-state solution, as we all know. And just as it's going on in Palestine, the genocide is going on right here in the U.S. It's going on across the on the borders. It's going on in Nigeria. It's going on in Liberia. It's going on in Sudan for the very exact things that Comrade Ann just mentioned, for the organs, sex. We heard about Epstein. This has been going on for centuries. There's never been a contradiction by Netanyahu, though, because his drive, as he would note on the air tonight, he did, is that Israel is achieving the goal of genocide on all Arab Palestinians. And while the U.S. has claimed it has asked Netanyahu to tamp down his vicious and extreme vicarious bombing of Palestine while in hospitals, while children were in school, while churches and mosques were being attended. Clearly, we see the U.S. contradictions, heavy laden as the U.S. supplies billions of arms and cash, naval and air support in attempts to keep any interference or intercession from entering this genocide. Over 30,000, so they say. We know it's more, and I'd say even more Palestinians have died in this Holocaust so far. And the sham began October the 7th with the so-called kidnapping of those poor Zionists over in Israel. This thing has been set up. You put nothing past colonialism. You put nothing past colonizers. You put nothing past pedophiles. You put nothing past Zionists. You put nothing past those who hate you forever, and that will be the colonizer. We are only the tools to be used, just as we saw with the Secretary of Defense, who did not state that hospital. They chastised him in the back room, and now come to find out he's got colon cancer. Right? That's what he's got. So this is all in the cabal of the colonial mode of production. I would like to raise, and I'm going to make this as concise right now, two sites that I would like for everybody to go to. One being INPEDM, International People's Democratic Uhuru Movement. You can go that online, and what it specifies are the classes undertaken out of South Africa, out of Liberia, out of that point or portion of Africa. And this is every week. One day, Thursdays on at 2 p.m. on Fridays at 3 p.m. Every week, go to INPEDM, these studies. Also, I would like for you to go to Hands Off Uhuru to keep up with what's going on with Chairman Omani, another man, another revolutionary, who is at the age of 82 now and looking at death sentence. We all know. And you, our comrade, that will be the Hands Off Uhuru. Please do that. Comrade, father, mentor, Ralph, graced us all with such a powerful presence. There's not one on this call that I heard. I'm so proud to have heard the royalty, the immaculate, the charge, the of Ralph Pointer, because I too fall right in that league of inspired. I want to thank you all
thank
for
you.
Who you are. I salute Uhuru.
Uhuru, thank you so much, Brother Sayero. Keep the reports coming. Thank you very much. We want to go to a member of the young folks that are moving up. Miss Brothers from the Republic of New Africa, but he's also a staunch advocate for political prisoners. Brother Saddam, your mic is open, and thank you for joining us this evening. Again, I want to remind my comrades, be mindful of the time. If you have a website or you have an event, state it clearly, because we are about education. Go ahead, Brother Saddam. Your mic is open. New Republic of New Africa.
Thank you very much, Mama Betty, for allowing me to come on the call and just be a part of the amazing radio show that Baba Ralph spent so much time establishing. And I honestly just want to remember the legacy of Baba Ralph here, certainly, and let everybody know that Baba Sapo Odinga needs your prayers. And for everyone to contribute to the GoFundMe, if you already know about it, certainly. And for everyone to visit the PGRNA's website, and I'm actually pulling it up now. For everyone, I believe that it's just PGRNA.com. I'm sorry, I'm pulling it up now, actually. Mainly, that's really the main thing that I want to say is for everyone to keep Baba Sapo Odinga in your prayers and to send money to the GoFundMe if you can, and spread that word. He is in certainly great need of those prayers and of any support that we can give him. I think that's the most important thing. We can't lose any more warriors this way without everyone contributing everything that they can in every way that we can. So I can't stress it enough. I just want to repeat that. And also keeping our legacy, keeping the legacy of Baba Ralph Pointer alive by doing exactly that, carrying on the work. And I just wanted to put the PGRNA, the Provisional Government of the Republic of New Africa, something for everybody to think about. It's something that Baba Sapo Odinga and so many other political prisoners and prisoners of war have dedicated their entire lives to, building an independent government of black people in the United States of America, known as New African People. For those that don't know, the Republic of New Africa was established on March 31st, in 1968 in Detroit. The black government conference was held by over 500 black nationalists. A Declaration of Independence, a constitution called the Court of Umoja, was written and signed by those 500 attendees, including Queen Mother Moore, which I'm sure everybody is familiar with, Brother Amari Ogedeli, Brother Gaidi Ogedeli, Brother Ron Karenga, Brother Mary Baraka, and many other names as well. They were all students and followers of Brother Baba Malcolm X to establish an independent nation state of black people in the United States, from the United States of America. That's where I want to pretty much leave it at for now. And,
all right. We
I don't want to too much time.
Appreciate it. And please keep giving us updates on our aging political warriors, both behind the bars and in minimum security outside the death camps. Thank you, Brother Saddam. Much, much appreciated. Thank you so much. We're going to move on now to Boston Jericho. Boston Jericho, thank you so much for representing this weekend for Brother Ralph. Your mic is open.
Sister, thank you. And I would like to know, like, for us all to keep in mind, whatever you need help in keeping this going, everybody should step up. You know, I never worked in a coal mine, you know, but I shoveled a lot of it. I never worked in a steel mine, but I saw a lot of men down in it. And believe me, I know what side I'm on, you know, sister. And I think that's where Ralph, you know, he got his clear understanding of capitalism and imperialism.
Exactly, exactly.
You know, we should all pick up on Ralph's energy and increase the pressure, you know. And, you know, like Sister Julie was saying, you know, like an area in a coal mine, you know. But I don't think there's no consciousness in these borders but ours, you know. And those who cannot bring themselves to raising the struggle to another level, I hope they'll support those who can. That's on the move. Keep it going.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And again, thank you for your words on behalf of Brother Baba Ralph this weekend. We're going to move right along. We're going to open up the mic of a long-term political ally of Brother Ralph in the struggle for schools and in the struggle for housing and in the struggle to hold a corrupt two-party system accountable. Sister Gwen, your mic is open. And again, people, be conscious of the time. We've extended it. We want to make sure we get everybody in. Thank you for joining us, Sister Gwen.
Hi, Betty. I guess when we're talking about Ralph, when we were at the service the other day, our friend Joel asked me if I was going to speak, and I said no. I didn't really feel like I had anything that was valuable to say. But, you know, I actually think I do, and I actually realized when I was at Ralph's service the other day that he understood what I was trying to do with PS 109, and I didn't really know that he understood what I was trying to do. I didn't really know that it was a part of his life like it was a part of my life. And as I'm thinking about Ralph, and I was thinking so much over the last couple of days, that there was a lot of reasons why I liked Ralph. I mean, everybody liked him as a person. And I liked him because I felt like I had a lot of things in common with him. You know, it's a strange life. I meet this man. Ralph was married to a white woman, and I was married to a black man. And then we had this commonality of this school struggle. And he really did get what I was trying to do. He really understood it, that it wasn't just I was trying to save a building. I was trying to save a building for a particular group of people, people that cannot protect themselves, people that should be able to rely on grown-ups to step up to the plate for them, people that get pushed to the side because they're children and we're so caught up in our own selfish desires that we don't think about them and what they are going to do for our future and as our future. And so I really got the other day when I heard other people talking about Ralph just how important education was for him. Education is really important to me, and it's also really ironic because of my own struggle I had in school. But anyway, I wanted to pass that on, and I also wanted to say very briefly that I, too, am devastated by what's happening in Palestine. But I've been doing a lot of listening for a while now about 9/11 and the ties that 9/11 has to Israel and to Palestine. And I would ask people to pick up the, you know, take a look online at for the Project for the New American Century, because this document was written before we attacked Iraq and before 9/11 happened, and it called for a catastrophic event similar to that of Pearl Harbor in order for us to conquer all the Arabic nations, seven of them altogether. And who was at the center of this was the Israeli state. I think if we look at this roadmap, we can see where we're going. We've already been in war with five of these countries, and it's never been a part of this to win any of these wars. And so I think that the idea that in America we basically didn't ask too many questions about 9/11, we let it roll off our shoulders as incredibly crazy as the story and the scenario were, and the losses we had here. And we didn't go into it. We didn't want to think about it. We just wanted to move on. Well, I would ask everybody to start looking back and trying to connect the dots from 9/11 to where we are now in Palestine and to where we are going. Because it seems to me that Israel is not just controlling the United States, they're controlling the world at this point. And the way they're behaving is crazy. It's like they turned into the Nazis. They have changed identities. And I keep thinking about the psychology of it. You know, there are women, there are people that get beaten as children and know the bitter hand of their abuser. And then I grow up and they are the abuser. And this is the irony of Israel. We listen to you know, the horrible horrors of what people went through in the Nazi Holocaust, and we see people that are the survivors, the relatives, and they're perpetrating the very same crimes upon these poor people in Gaza. And it seems to be no end in sight. It seems to be that there's no end here. And I feel so helpless, I guess like so many do, because we can't go in, we can't cross the borders, we can't give them water, we can't give them aid. And I feel horrible as an American that my tax dollars are going to fund this. So,
well,
I want to
say thank you.
I'm going to keep people. Yes, I thank you so much, Betty, for allowing me to share. I just want to say lastly that I thank you, Betty, for your dignity and your grace, and that you showed up tonight, and you're such a beacon, and the support you gave Ralph, because without you, well, you're that great woman behind the great man and next to him, and I just thank you so much.
Well, I thank you, and I want to say to you, by ourselves, this is what Ralph was saying, you know, we're individuals. But when we stop being individuals, when we unite and understand that fascism, capitalism cannot exist without fascism. It is just as simple as that. It is immoral and decadent, and there is no end to their greed. So they have to have fascism. They have to have genocide. They have to terrorize us into feeling that we are helpless. But we are not helpless. Ralph was not helpless. He was in the belly of the earth. And yet he stood up for his dignity against these racists. And so we can do that. But we may not be able to do it by ourselves, but we can do it together. And please keep the theory that you are talking about in terms of 9-1-1, keep it out there, because I think you're totally correct. But I'm not a scientist, and I'm not the best military strategist. But I do agree with you that there is a conspiracy behind the conspiracy here. But let us not forget that capitalism is the problem, that fascism and racism is the problem. And they use the different colonies, and they have to create colonies through terror and genocide. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And thank you for lifting up Ralph's heart, because he came here to fight for community control of education. And he met Queen Mother, and they joined together to understand that you have to fight the colony from within. Thank you, Gwen, for getting on, and thank you for acknowledging me. I appreciate it. And I hope I always have the strength to hold up, you know, his name and to honor Sister Lynn. Thank you. I want to move on. We've got another person in the house who has an analysis. Again, I want to emphasize to everybody, try to keep tailor your comments and try to keep them brief. We've extended the time. We're going to go past 10. We want everybody to be able to hang in there and listen to each other. Brother Joel, I hope your phone is working tonight. Your mic is open. And thank you for being at Ralph's homegoing this weekend.
Yes. Can people hear me?
Yes, we hear you. Your mic is working very well. Thank you.
Oh, okay. So for once, it's working right. Okay. I want to say that it was tremendously moving to be at the services and the funeral of Ralph. And we realized that a tremendous beacon light had gone out. It can't be underestimated, and a lot of people might underestimate it, because Ralph never really got the credit for the leadership that he gave to so many struggles from so many different angles, and so much, pretty much behind the scenes. And behind the scenes, he also led a lot of the leaders, because he was able to see, I believe, much more deeply into the contradictions that that one is faced with when one lives in what the Cuban poet Jose Martí identified as the belly of the beast, meaning the United States. And by the way, that identification was made during the Spanish-American War, but certainly is in spirit with the revolutionary Cuba that lives on and fights on today, as few countries do. And this is after sending much of its youth to Africa to ensure the revolution against Portuguese colonialism, which ultimately culminated also in the defeat of the apartheid regime in South Africa. Anyway, we're living in the belly of the beast, and it's difficult. It's very difficult to get through the contradictions here in the place where much of the working class has become what used to be called a labor aristocracy. That is, it feels itself benefiting from imperialism, that the world is robbed of its resources, of its labor, and so much surplus value is made from the super exploitation of the third world, that even people here that are exploited because corporations and the banks profiteer off their labor here, some of that is lessened by the surplus that's taken from the third world that allows, up until now at least, cheap products to be sold in the United States, and the standard of living at least until recently has lauded it above everybody else, at least since World War II. And Ralph was one of those who was able to see through it. He was one of the few that was able to unite really three of the struggles. One, the struggle for community control in the schools, which has to do with shaping the minds of the oppressed people and getting the truth into their brains and decolonizing the brains of the youth that are going to grow up to be the adults and are going to have their own kids and impart their own outlooks. For example, in Ralph's case, he was born in a union family, and he had parents that had experience in organizing in a union context at a very early age. And then he began, as you say, in the coal mines, carrying that on. And that's what he's asking us to do, to carry things on. Well, that's community control is very important in the areas, especially where oppression is concentrated in the community, the oppression largely from outside the community, but also through puppets and collaborators inside the community that are bought off with that immense surplus value that's sweated out of the oppressed people of the world, most of whom are not bought off. So I want to say that, and now a few specific things were brought up. This whole thing with Epstein and the involvement of Ehud Barak as apparently one of Epstein's handlers shows one of the mechanisms by which almost everyone who holds office in this country, even members of city councils or something, are at the end chain of blackmail. Even now, with the latest developments taking place, and the media still presents Epstein, to the extent that they present him at all, as if he were just an ordinary pimp, but serving the high end of the ruling class and their political puppets and so on. But in reality, he was part of a center by which those people are blackmailed into lockstep. Make one move out of lockstep, and your life can be destroyed by revealing some of the stuff that was going on directly under the supervision of people like Epstein and so on. And, of course, he had to be silenced at some point because of fear that some of that information could come out in an uncontrolled way and discredit the political establishment more than it is, make it more vulnerable to revolutionary arrest by the people, meaning revolution. And the other thing is that all of these things that we're seeing now taking place, for example, the Israelis are concentrating on doing a purge inside the United States, not even just of the political officials, but, for example, three university presidents have recently been forced to resign, resigned under pressure or otherwise forced, for example, by mobilizing Zionists with money to withhold the flow of some of their money as contributions and donations to those universities if these three officials were left in charge. And these officials, by the way, they were not pro-Palestinian or anything. But they ran campuses where demonstrations took place, where a lot of the students, at least the activist types, were in the majority pro-Palestinian, were reacting to the tremendous oppression and genocide visited upon Palestinian people, but they tried to maintain free speech, including for the pro-Palestinians on their campus and where there were conflicts and so on, to encourage debates, to arrive at the truth, and to train students to some degree in that spirit. Now they're all purged. They're all accused of being some kind of anti-Semites, and almost as if they were Nazi stormtroopers. And not only have they been purged from the university presidencies, but also given reputations where it'll be very difficult for them to recover at least their reputations, at least among the largely pro-Zionist political establishment in this country. And every other university president and professor and even the students at the universities, they look at this as an example that you can have your life destroyed if you are not pro-Israel enough. And we've seen that carried out with nobody noticing anything. We should also pay attention to the fact that when Trump was in office, he gave the Israelis something that former presidents hadn't given them. For example, moving the capital and the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem, making it much more difficult to for Palestinians to even negotiate. The Israelis apparently were very frustrated that Trump, who engineered Abrahamic agreements where many Arab countries, such as Saudi Arabia, not Saudi Arabia, but the United Arab Emirates and other countries, Morocco, and they had come into what were called Abrahamic agreements with the Israelis, centering on building up for a war against Iran. And that's even Biden admitted that one of the reasons why October 7th took place is that the Palestinians felt that with Saudi Arabia signing on to an agreement with the Israelis, that the Palestinians would be totally dealt out of the political scene. And actually, they've disrupted the process of being dealt out by making their presence felt. And even Biden admitted that. You can't believe most of what he says, but that particular idea is part of the truth around us. Now, in other words, when you look at something like January 6th, for example,
Joel,
at a time when the Israelis were frustrated.
Yeah, we're going to have you sort of hold some of that for next week. You can't give people too much because they won't be able to hold on to some of the, I mean, every one of your sound bites is right on. And I thank you for connecting the dots with what Comrade Julia Wright was telling us about Epstein. That was very critical. But I do have to move on. Would you like to say some closing words? And please forgive me for interrupting this incredible seminar that you're giving us. You're not just speaking,
I just want to finish up what I was starting to say, that even January 6th must have had at least a lot of rooting, if not behind-the-scenes influence and promotion of the January 6th congressional attempt to prolong Trump's presidency, because they were very frustrated that somebody that supported them that strongly was not going to get a second term. And they're worried that if the U.S. doesn't march in lockstep with the Israelis, that's where their military and financial power comes from, largely. So the January 6th thing has to be looked at from that point of view.
Listen, Joel, you're going to have to review some of this next week, because I can't even pull it all together. And yet I know every single fact you gave us is relevant. But people, I hope you will connect the dots with the way we started the program with Sister Julia Wright. And I hope you will connect the dots with what Brother Sayedo was trying to say and what Sister Gwen was trying to say. Those comments, those three comments, tie directly to what Brother Joel has just said. And so we're going to have to find a way for you to come back next week. And Joel, recap this. I hope you took notes while you were talking, and I hope everybody in the listening family heard you as well. Please, people, we've got to learn to connect the dots, and we've got to stop acting as individuals, because they're united. Thank you, Brother Joel. Thank you, and thank you for what you said about Ralph. Next week, I'm going to take time to comment on what you said about him and education. But one thing I want to pick up on is your statement about the anti-Semitism. Elambe Brass said it was a time when an anti-Semite was somebody who didn't like Jews. Now, an anti-Semite is anyone the Jews don't like. And when Ralph came up and talked about community control of education, they called him an anti-Semite. Now, why would he be called an anti-Semite for saying that black people should control their schools in their neighborhoods, being funded by their tax dollars with their children in them? We need to look at that. The question is, who is the direct controller of your colony? Who has all the jobs in your colony? Think about it. And thank you, Joel. I want to keep moving on. We've got to hear from Commander Potts. Folks, I want you to really take out your pens and take notes on what our commander in the Black Panther Party has to say. Sister Potts, thank you for waiting. It is not because we don't value you. Please make your report.
Thank you so much. First, I want to start off with saying Ashe to Brother Ralph Porter, our comrade. But I am Sherelle, the commander of the Black Panther Party and also the National Director of Community Programs for the Black Panther Party. So I would like to start off about the Goon Squad. The Goon Squad trial date has been changed approximately 3 times within the last probably 3 months. The new date for that trial and sentencing date is March 18th, 2024 through March 20th, 2024, with all 6 of those officers/criminals will face their sentencing in time. In the
would you
secondary,
the, this Goon Squad, review the history for those who may not remember, because we've had so many horrendous abuses on the part of the Army of Occupation called the police. Please tell who the Goon Squad is.
The Goon Squad is six white officers of Rankin County, Mississippi, where they broke into someone's home, two black males, Mr. Eddie Parker and Mr. Michael Jenkins, where Mr. Michael Jenkins was shot in the mouth and also sexually assaulted by one of the officers, made to strip down and take a shower together. They was waterboarded. They had milk pouring on them. They had eggs thrown on them. They were tased several times. And the sheriff of that department claimed that he did not know, where we received the taser reports that were blacked out, meaning they tried to cover it up. And
all
this
right.
Happened
so now you're saying
County.
Again that this trial has been postponed yet again.
Yes, by the judge. It has been postponed again. We were supposed to be going to court next week for the sentencing. They just changed it as of yesterday, and it will be changed to a concrete date as of maybe sometime within the next 7 days. And we feel that they are doing this because they don't want us to show up in the courtroom.
Yes.
So they keep changing it to try to make us just want to give up. And we're not going to give up. And like I told them, I don't care if it's Jesus' birthday. We will be in that courtroom front and center.
Now, do you have a website? How can people support what you're doing? Do you have a petition online? Just what can we do?
Well, if everybody has Facebook, you can look me up under Sherelle Potts, and we have a lot of things there. And you can also look under the New Black Panther page on Facebook as well, and you'll be able to keep up with things. And Attorney Malik Zulu Shabazz and Trent Walker, who are the attorneys on that case with Black Lawyers for Justice, is also on Facebook, and they're talking about the case. And I really don't need the support. I would rather for everybody to support the Black Lawyers for Justice who came to fight this fire unapologetically, all full speeds ahead. No matter what was said, they had death threats and all, and they still chose to go against this racist county, which is known for killing black people and being told, take y'all Black A back to Jackson, which is one of the blackest cities in Mississippi.
Okay, so once again, what do you want people to do?
Support Black Lawyers for Justice.
Okay, and they have a website.
Yes, blacklawyersforjustice.com.
Well, I thank you. If there's anyone, I know the lawyers are not allowed to discuss a case while it's happening, but if there are other people in the community that you think would like to get on our program and make this story more authentic, feel free to bring them with you.
Most
okay,
definitely, and I would also like to speak on the water, if that's okay for Jackson.
Please, please continue, yes.
Okay, the water situation with Jackson, Mississippi, we were like Flint, Michigan. And we're still dealing with water issues. The reason why we're dealing with these water issues is because of the industrial waste that was dumped into our Jackson water sewer. And the residents of the city of Jackson never received a Safety Water Drinking Act notification from EPA saying that our water was safe to drink. But yet and still, they have stopped all donations of water for the city of Jackson. And also, the person that's the head of the water here don't even care.
Okay, I want to once again make people aware of this. While you are talking about Gaza and the fact that the people of Gaza have no water, the people of Mississippi are almost on the same level as the people of Gaza, except they're not being bombed. All right? It is important to understand that capitalism is capitalism and colonialism is colonialism, no matter where it is. And just as the people of Gaza are occupied, the people who are of African descent in this country are occupied every place they are because there's a terrorist institution known as the Army of Occupation, euphemistically called the police. And this is what Sister Potts is trying to bring home to you. They enforce the situation where there's no water by having an army of occupation that can come in their house, in your house at any time, and torture you. And so the Goon Squad is going to be postponed and postponed until they think black people or the people who are not black who have a conscience will no longer protest. So I thank you, Commander Potts, and I thank Brother Sayero, who also brings some of these stories to us. Is there anything else you want to add?
No, I just want to say thank you for having me on, and I will continue to support in any way that I can and continue to be strong and be the queen that you are. I thank you, and I honor you.
I thank you so much. Ralph Pointer respected the struggle that you were engaged in. And I know a number of people were supporting you by sending water to Mississippi. If you have more information in terms of that, I hope you will make us update us about that next week, because I know the problem is not being solved. And there's a lot of political terrorism going on. The governor is taking the resources the federal government is sending there for water and diverting it to white communities. And I think we need to lift this story up, make people understand that Gaza is everywhere. We are all occupied. I want to open up the mic of someone. The first three digits are 901. The last four digits, 9080. Did you want to make a quick comment? We're coming toward the end of the program. 9080. Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we hear you.
This is President Sama Ott with the Provisional Government of the Republic of New Africa. This is my first time calling in. I'm enjoying what I'm hearing. And I look forward to next week.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you and welcome. Thank you anytime. Whatever struggle you are engaging in your geographic area, and whatever successful strategies that you have used, this program is about that. We don't just want to say, woe is me. We want to say, we got your back. We want to say we got a solution. Thank you so much for calling in. Much appreciated. We're going to continue to the next number that we see that we don't necessarily recognize. We're not saying that after everyone has to speak, but if you wish to make a comment, 774 are the first three digits, 2863 are the last four digits, 2863. Did you want to make a comment? 774-2863, your mic is, yes, did you want to make a comment?
It's Saddam, Mama Betty, and again, I just want to thank you for all the work that you've done.
Well, thank you. What geographic area are you calling from?
I'm in Boston.
Okay, well, thank you. I know Brother Kazi has this covered, so I'm going to say thank you for getting on this evening, and free the land. And we really appreciate you calling in this evening, and we thank you for acknowledging Brother Ralph this weekend. Much appreciated. Okay. We see another number here, pardon me, 215 are the first three digits, and the last four digits are 5554. Did you want to make a comment? 215, the first three digits, 5554. Your mic is open. Did you want to make a comment? Okay, if we don't hear anything, you have a right to have your mic remain silent and to simply listen. We had an announcement at the top of the program, and we have a poet who's been hanging in there for us. So we're going to have our poet, and then if possible, we'll have repeat the announcement that we had at the top of the poet. We want Sister Nzinga to grace us. I hope she's got the poem that she read to honor Brother Ralph. Do you have that poem ready for us, Sister?
Hello, good evening, everyone. Can you hear me?
Yes, thank you for waiting. I hear you loud and clear. I hear you loud and clear.
Okay, I'm just going to read the poem again that I wrote the other day, but I just want to say, before I say that, Sister Betty, thank you so much, and I highly respect and honor you, and I highly respected and honored Brother Ralph. Just wanted to say I only knew him for 3 years, y'all, 3 years. And he left such an indelible mark on my life.
I want to thank you, Sister Nzinga, because when he was really going downhill, you came and you recited some of your poems. And before you left, he was sitting up in bed, you know, looking at you with admiration and appreciation. I will always honor you as a poet for that. Poetry saves lives.
Thank you.
And poetry.
Yes. And he was amazing even that day. He had that strength, like he just wanted to get out of the bed and say yes. He, as sick as he was, he still looked strong. But this is the poem I wrote for Brother Ralph for his homegoing service. It's called Beyond the Doorway to Heaven. Beyond the doorway to heaven is a calm and peaceful life. Some enter it in harmony, others enter it in strife. For whatever the reason, it's hard to accept of a loved one in that respect. The days ahead may seem long and weary, as life will go on often teary. The memories left behind are worth more than gold, memories that will last through time untold. Like the indelible mark our comrade left behind, those memories will forever remain etched in our minds. Going on with life won't be easy to do. Only the strength of God will see us through. As we remember Ralph's laughter, as we remember his smile, as we remember how compelling the sound of his voice, Tuesday after Tuesday, encouraging and reminding us that we have no choice but to fight for those who have no voice. And let us remember how till he breathed his last breath, he remained a voice for the voiceless. Rest in heavenly peace, Brother Ralph, and I thank you for fighting zealously to the very end. Thank you for allowing me to share that, Sister Betty.
Well, I want to thank you for what you said in the hospital, because, you see, it's not about a drip or an intravenous picking your arm. It's about the spiritual connection of us as one human to another. So I just want to acknowledge everyone who helped us soothe our grief and our pain this weekend. And I want to thank you. I also want to make you know we are trying to thank for a commitment from Riverside Church. We're going to have something for Brother Ralph on his birthday, March the 21st, from 5 to 9. We've been in touch, and so far they have given us commitments. So we hope that you will put that in your calendar, and that if you have any histories that you know about Ralph that we may not have, please join our committee to put his real biography out there. And I thank you on behalf of the family and comrades. I'm going to open up your mic. If anybody did not get a chance to speak and wants to give another comment, I want you to please take very seriously the comments of Brother Cole and Sister Comrade Julia Wright. This is very sinister. We must deal with the evil empire. We can't afford to be afraid now. Thank you.
Oh, I thank you, Sister Betty. I don't know if you hear me. I just want to say I love you. I love you, and I wished I had been with you, but I'm with you in spirit, and I just wanted to say that the beautiful thing in the new year is that Mumia's voice is on Mark Lamont Hill. I think you all know it anyway, but we can hear Mumia every week, yes.
That is wonderful, absolutely wonderful. Thank you for that bit of information. And thank you for your comments this evening. And good night, everyone. On behalf of
good
Comrade night, Ralph Pointed, what's happening? Blog Talk Radio.
Have a good one.
Good night.
Good night, everyone.
Good night. Good night.
Uhuru.
Good night.
Uhuru.
Uhuru.
Uhuru. Uhuru. Keep it going. Keep it going.
Good night, Betty.
Yes.
Let's suck up the pain and keep on going. Thank you.